You're listening to the MoneyWeb SAFM Market Update Podcast.
The United Nations Climate Change Conference 2024 is currently underway. It is the first week of the two-week conference. For those that don't know what I'm talking about COP29 that's taking place in Baku in Azerbaijan. And that is obviously a very focal point for all of the nations around the world around things that concern the climate and concern what it is that we're doing to build a more sustainable globe as a population, I suppose. I'm joined on the line by the head of campaigns at Natural Justice, Catherine Robinson, to take a look at the expectations for this year's COP summit conference, rather, and to see if we can make sense of what's going on there. Good evening, Catherine. Thanks so much for taking the time. Let's start with taking a look at what's on the agenda for COP29 this year.
Thanks, Jimmy. And yeah, good evening to your listeners. Well, this is being dubbed the Finance COP. Because finance is going to be one of the key and primary outcomes that parties need to agree on at COP29. So this will be the first time in 15 years that countries will reevaluate the amount and type of finance developing countries receive to pay for climate action. And this is since the 100 billion annual target was set in 2009. And that target was really, really quite flippant. It wasn't science-based. It wasn't needs-based. And that target of 100 billion per year was a target that developed and wealthiest nations, those most responsible for the climate crisis, have consistently failed to meet. So basically, the fight now is for a new collective quantified goal that is needs and science-based. And it's really an important opportunity for developed countries to fulfill their legal and moral obligations under the Climate Convention and the Paris Accords. And this is really to provide means of implementation to enable developing countries to phase out fossil fuels, advance a just transition, mitigate climate change, and obviously adapt to the already disproportionate impacts that the Global South faces because of climate change.
Catherine, when we look at some of the critical pain points, there's obviously things that are still up in the air around wars, around potential conflicts of interest that exist in terms of how things are implemented. But the finance one is obviously a big one where a lot of the countries have said that they're experiencing a lack of financial support from the developed countries in implementing these changes that everybody needs to kind of put top of the list. What are some of the critical pain points that you've been able to identify from just what's been put out there in the conversation?
Well, look, the truth is that the developed nations are consistently reneging on their responsibilities under the convention, right? The Paris Agreement has three fundamental principles, and the principles are historical responsibility, equity, and common but differentiated responsibility. And we know that, you know, global north countries and developed nations are most responsible for the climate crisis, but they don't bear the brunt that the global south faces. They don't bear the level of loss and damage that the global south faces, and they're in a better position to start transitioning, right? And developing countries need money to transition. They need money to mitigate climate change, they need money to adapt, and they need money for the loss and damage that they're consistently facing every time they're slammed with a climate disaster. And already the Global South is facing an unprecedented debt crisis. So, you know, earlier this week, the G77 plus China rejected the finance text on the table because it, again, was, you know, developed nations reneging on their responsibilities. It was unbalanced. It was inequitable. So the G77 plus China, you know, your developing nation bloc, which includes South Africa, is calling for at least $1.3 trillion every year as a climate debt repayment package. So in public finance, in grant-based financing, so that climate vulnerable communities and countries can start addressing climate change. And of course, developed nations, you know, are persistently saying they don't have enough money for climate action, but they've got plenty of money to spend on military aid to fund genocides in Palestine, for instance. So, you know, America has spent billions of US dollars on military aid, on occupation, war, apartheid, and a genocide, but they don't have enough money to pay for what they owe in terms of climate reparations and climate finance to the global south. Military spending across the globe exceeds $2 trillion per year, And G77 plus China is asking for a mere 1.3 trillion just to get us started.
Sounds like we're going to get to a point where this conversation becomes very, very awkward. And I suppose that's what happens with conversations that involve money. There's always someone that doesn't want to part with it, someone else that needs it, and someone else that's caught in between. Do we think that these problems are enough to sort of create a split in how the climate goals are then tackled? I mean, I'm thinking about it from the divide that you've mentioned, the global north versus global south. Are we likely to potentially see a divergence where the global south says, well, if you're not going to assist us, we're not going to do this, and you can pursue this on your own?
It's generally the other way around, Jimmy. Basically, I mean, for instance, Trump has come in again, and he is going to withdraw the United States from the UNFCCC process, which is a disaster for a global problem that requires global cooperation, particularly because of the United States' historical responsibility for the climate crisis. So it's very seldom the global south that pulls out. It's often the global north. We've just seen, although they're not a global north country, we've got Argentina. They've just pulled out because of their right-wing government. They've just pulled out of the climate COP. France basically boycotted because of the Russia-Ukraine war. So what it requires, you know, there's always a divergence between the global north and the global south. There's always a fight because of this fundamental issue that the global north is responsible for the climate crisis, but bear the least impact. And the global south is primarily impacted by the climate, a crisis that they did not cause, essentially. So there's always going to be that divide. There always is a divide during the negotiations. What it requires of the global south is definitely south-south cooperation, south-south solidarity. And particularly on our continent, you know, we need our African group of negotiators to be singing from the same song sheet and really, you know, pushing the global north to be accountable to the Framework Convention on Climate Change.
Mm. When we look at the accountability side of it, I mean, there has been conversations as well around approaching this from different perspectives. And I want to get your thoughts around this from an impact perspective. There's always these talks around carbon offsetting, and carbon offsetting is essentially not the same as carbon reductions. Reductions are actively reducing the footprint and the carbon emissions. Offsetting is saying we'll continue at these levels. We'll just do something else that offsets what we've done in this part. What kind of approach is needed here? Because if you're the global south, you could just as easily say, well, we also deserve the opportunity to industrialize through fossil fuels the same way the global north industrialized. How do you balance the actual impact requirements that are needed here with everybody's individual agendas and come to a conclusion that actually benefits the outcome of the conference?
Yeah, well, I mean, this is about common but differentiated responsibility. So it recognizes that this is a global problem. We have a common responsibility, but we have differentiated responsibilities depending on whether we are a developed country, a developing country, and our historical emissions, right? So that's the bottom line. When it comes to offsetting, I mean, this is highly problematic because it doesn't lead to actual and real emission reductions, right? So this is about carbon trading, offsetting. It's about ducking and diving from the need to urgently and rapidly cut emissions. We've already seen at this COP that they've already pushed through bypassing government negotiations. They've already pushed through very problematic rules under Article 6, which is around market mechanisms and carbon markets. And the truth is, carbon markets are a dangerous distraction. What's actually needed, it's not a climate solution. They do not count as carbon emission reductions, and it does not count as climate finance. And they are marred. I mean, carbon markets have been marred by scandal of land and human rights abuses. And unfortunately, what's happened at this COP is it's taken us a step closer to really operationalizing these really risky and false mechanisms to mitigate climate change and to put funding on the table.
It certainly sounds like the teams at COP29 have their work cut out for them. We will keep an eye on the story. It is going into next week as well, and we'll see what the outcomes are. Maybe countries do finally agree to do their fair share based on their fair historical consumption. But until then, we'll have to keep an eye on it. Thanks so much, Catherine, for those insights and for the time. That was Catherine Robinson, who is the head of campaigns at Natural Justice, on the COP29 conference currently taking place in Azerbaijan, and what those outcomes could potentially look like.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb SAFM Market Update podcast, uploaded weekdays at 7 p.m. For more MoneyWeb podcasts, go to moneyweb.co.za or the app and follow MoneyWeb News for daily updates.